Talk Radio.
Welcome, welcome everyone to Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter show. We are here this evening here, right here in Fresno, California, here, first month of the year, 2023, 1-19-23. Happy to be back on the show tonight. We have an interesting, conference, workshop, educational, or all the above to me. And but before I go into that, I just want to give a shout out to all of the freedom fighters across the world, those who started with me over 40 years ago in the trenches, all the way from the East Coast to the West Coast, to the Midwest. Some have passed on to pass on the glory to the other side. And, it's just been a great opportunity working with people. Some of the people I have not even met in my life and have passed on, but they have taught me a lot. And I just want to remember them. They're ancestors now. And so, we just never can forget the ancestors. I'm the pastor of Free AME Ministries here in West Fresno, better known as FAME. We today had our food giveaway. We blessed a lot of people in West Fresno, all walks of life. And that's just what we do, we do it good. And so we have I'm not even going to call her a guest, more like family, sister, mentor, our speaker tonight, Just to give someone, give everyone a little framework of what we're going to be doing this Saturday at Free ME Ministries, we're going to be having a call to action domestic violence safety planning, which will be led by Tina Rodriguez, who is nationally known, probably internationally, but I know nationally, and she does a lot of heavy lifting. And I, you know, have grown to have a respect for her and the work that she does. She's very passionate about it and take it very seriously, you know, because she's, you know, dealing with people's lives and children. And, you know, once we go into this, you'll kind of see and hear, you know, from her perspective on, you know, what's going on in the world. I'm a civil rights leader. I'm nationally, internationally known as well. Do a lot of heavy lifting here in Fresno, better known as Mississippi Fresno. And I have my own civil rights organization. So I wear a lot of hats, do a lot of heavy lifting, do a lot of organizing, mobilizing. And, you know, we just, you know, just trying to really, you know, be that thermostat that's needed here in this 21st century, moving into the 30th century, and all of those ancestors who have paved the way for us to be here today. You know, we say our shade to them. And so, but anyway, this Saturday, there will be a Spanish session where we talk about, in Spanish, the call to action domestic violence safety planning. And we also have an English version. And so we have been putting this out in the community, Facebook, Instagram, you know, wherever, word of mouth, flyers. We just really, 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 really been getting this out. And so let's jump into this thing here. We are Facebook Living, and all of a sudden my phone says trying to reconnect. Ain't that something? Oh, my God. It's just always something with these phones, I'm telling you. We're just trying to figure it out. But anyway, we're going to go ahead and bring our guest on, Ms. Tina Rodriguez. Ms. Tina Rodriguez, welcome to Dr. Harold's Black Lives Matter Show. Please introduce yourself, and we'll see how we'll get this going. Are you there? Okay, so I'm gonna need for her to call back in. Look like it's buffing. Let's see here. Let me have her call back in real quick. Just a minute. Please go to voice. Call back in. Let me tell her to call back in. Let's see here. Sometimes this happens to us a lot where we create a show. And we get a lot of buffing and stuff like that. And so I'm going to send her a message real quick to tell her to call back in. All right. Okay, let's see how we can get this going here. All right, let's see here. Hello.
Hi, this is Tina.
Tina, are you with us, Tina?
Hi.
Hey, there
you
are. Yeah, loud and clear. I apologize for the technical difficulty. Sometimes it just happens. It's out of my control. But we're glad to have you on Dr. Harris Black Lives Matter Show. We're Facebook Live and all across the world. I tried to give you the best intro I could. I don't know if I did a good job or not, but... But we're just thankful that you took the time to come on tonight. I know you're very busy, you know, dealing with a lot of different situations, but we're having an event at Free AME this Saturday, 806 Collins in West Fresno. And you're the best person that I know in the world that can talk to us about the call to action, domestic violence, safety planning. And so I'm going to go ahead and yield the floor to you. And you take us on memory lane, whichever way you want us to go.
Thank you, Dr. Harris. I appreciate you and everybody else that's joining us this evening. This is a very important topic, not just to me, but to our communities and to our family. And so before we get started, I want to thank you for inviting me on and for taking action, you know, and just reaching out to me. And I know you've reached out to several leaders. And so it's important for me to just acknowledge that and know that I know that not everybody is, you know, well-versed in domestic violence and how it impacts families. But we can see that very clearly it's a problem. It's a problem that continues to get worse. It's a problem that's causing more death. And it's a problem that we have to start holding ourselves accountable to responding to and to provide intervention and prevention for. And so for that reason, I stand on the work that the ancestors and the several leaders have put before me, those that started off creating crisis hotlines and building shelters long before I stepped into the space. And so with that, I'll say that there's been a lot of work done, and there's a lot more that still needs to be done. And one of the questions that I get quite often is, you know, why does it seem like it's gotten so bad? And it's, you know, sometimes people will even tell me, you know, it seems like since COVID, there's been just nonstop, you know, that's all you hear anymore is domestic violence. COVID didn't cause domestic violence. It magnified it because people were forced to be at home. There were stay-at-home orders. And we were put in an immediate position where we were not prepared on how to manage and respond to domestic violence during a pandemic. And so things such as restraining orders, escape plans, were not anymore an immediate action or resource that survivors could immediately turn to. And the ability to flee and escape also became impacted. And so COVID created an environment, a dynamic that really trapped victims in further into the violence that they were already experiencing. And we are now in a position where it continues to, you know, reach skyrocket numbers. We're breaking national records, especially here in the Central Valley. And so what we do know is that at this specific time, you know, we continue to have a tremendous amount of death. And one thing that crushes me is when I get calls from children, adult children, you know, family members taking care of younger children, you know, and they're telling me, I don't know what I'm going to do. Now, you know, in a position where I have custody of these children, or Miss Tina, can you help me explain death to her children? That's a common one that I get. And because of that, it is very important for us to start to shift how we provide prevention education on domestic violence. That's the key part that I want to elevate here and the purpose for Saturday. Up until this point, we've been codependent on curriculums, codependent on systems, codependent on financial resources and different opportunities. Codependency and isolation are embedded within the dynamic of domestic violence. We have to start holding ourselves accountable for that part. And, you know, oftentimes what I'll see is a lot of times people will say things like, you know, this person called 911 a ton of times, or they, you know, did this or they did that. The reality is, before somebody calls 911, probably for generations, there's been domestic violence in that home. And it's time for us to start taking that action and holding ourselves accountable for saying, you know what, I realize that somebody in my family has a problem with stalking, with power and control, or, you know, I'm trying to help somebody, but they continue to go back, even though I tried to help them leave one or more times. So many times we'll hear after someone's passed away. This is the thing, is that we'll hear after somebody has already passed away. Well, I knew the person had problems, but I didn't think they'd ever do that. Or, you know, she told me she was going through some problems, but I didn't know it was that bad. And whether it's neighbors that'll say, you know, yeah, I always heard fighting, or I didn't know what to do. It's time we all take some action. We cannot depend on anything else but ourselves to start taking some action so that we can start getting some prevention. And I'm not, you know, big on numbers, but if whether it's one person or three people or five, whoever shows up, this is not about singling people out and saying, you know, if you come to this presentation, it's because, you know, you're in that situation. I'm saying everybody. The statistics before COVID were one in every four girls by the age of 18 will have experienced some type of domestic violence or sexual assault. So if that was before COVID, you can imagine what it is right now. And so there's something for everybody to learn, because all of us are connected by either relation or profession or just by community. We all know more than three women. We know more than six men. I'm telling you, it's up to us. It's on our shoulders to come out and to learn more about what we can do in these situations.
There you have it. There you have it. Tina Rodriguez, call to action, domestic violence safety planning session this Saturday at 806 Collins Free AME, better known as FAME, right in on the Golden West Side of Fresno. You know, where do you start at here? You know, as a pastor, I deal with a lot of stuff. Let me say that. A lot of issues, you know, a lot of personalities, a lot of brokenness, a lot of hurt, a lot of pain, a lot of scars. And, you know, I had recently ran into a young lady, and she's a professional, and I won't say her name for its confidentiality. And, you know, she is going through this, and, you know, but if you didn't know her or have a relationship with her for his friendship, you would think that every day was just, you know, sunny and, you know, rosy. But her life is actually a living hell. And she's a working middle class woman and black sister. And, you know, and it just touched me. I'm like, what the heck is going on? Because, you know, I wasn't equipped with how to even, what to say, what to do, how involved you get, you know, do you get involved, you know, because it's, you know, when you're dealing with men and, you know, their spouses or their girlfriends, it's like, you know, where's that space, you know, what do you say, how involved do you get, because, you know, you could get hurt in the process as well, and, you know, but then I'm saying, well, I just can't sit here and do nothing, so, you know, I that's why I called you, Tim, because, you know, I knew that you have the experience, you know, you're well known across the world, and I said, you know, even as a pastor, you know, I need to become educated. You know, what is the Marjorie Mason Center? You know, what do they do? You know, I need to get more familiar with, you know, the different programs or the different homes or safe houses or, you know, what have you in our community, because it's important. You know, when someone knock on our door, it could be, or I get a phone call 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, you know, saying we have a battered woman, or, you know, or it could be a man. That's not, it says always women. But either way, it's like, what do I do with that? Who do I hand this off to, or who do I call? You know, because I'm not, the trained professional to deal with this, right? And so I think that, you know, moving forward, I think this Saturday is going to be a seed being planted in West Fresno, a positive seed, so that we can be equipped on how to deal with these different situations when they, you know, knock on our door.
That's the thing. And, you know, I appreciate that is everybody's kind of at a place where not knowing there's a problem, not quite sure how to respond to it. And I want to respect something that you brought up, and that's that, yes, we do have the Marjorie Mason Center in Fresno, and I pay my respect and regards to them for the many women that they have rescued, not just women, but men too, and children, and continue to keep, you know, their doors open through the pandemic, and that's not easy. And so I do want to make sure I mention that that is the emergency shelter for Fresno that provides that type of immediate intervention. In addition to that, the way that I do education for domestic violence is I don't frame it specifically for one or the other, meaning that the criminal justice system identifies a victim and then an abuser. I target domestic violence and everywhere it falls, whether it's the person with the anger issues, the person being assaulted, the children in that home, the mother-in-law in that home, the grandparents, the neighbors, whoever. The entire I target domestic violence in everywhere that it falls. And so when you mentioned that, you know, being a pastor, that you do hear things, and that's one thing that also comes up is that those that are, you know, whether it's a community-based or faith-based or wherever in the wherever there's individuals that you will encounter that will share that they may be in a crisis, and then we're, you know, immediately struck with how to respond to that, right? Because nobody wants to put themselves in danger, and I don't recommend, you know, anybody to do intervention without a safety plan in place. And that includes third-party people, meaning, you know, if we're at a local store, you know, somebody starts to say that they're being stalked and followed, I wouldn't recommend anybody there try to intervene. We have to create safety plans around how we respond to domestic violence. And we have to be mindful that there's a ways to be effective and also safeguard our own lives. And that's what we want to do is get that education out there. And whether it's an individual that has somebody that says, you know what, I don't know what it is. I black out and I just lose control of my anger, or I don't know what it is. I'm afraid to be left. Or it's somebody that says, you know what, I'm tired of helping this person move. They keep going back. Wherever they fall, we're spreading information and education to the entire community. And acknowledging that that domestic violence is a problem is one part of it, but then how to navigate prevention within that household is the next biggest piece, because we've been relying on things like restraining orders. Well, I'll tell you one thing, for somebody that has, you know, that's got a history of doing specifically strangulation and stalking, that restraining order is not going to do any good. And I've interviewed people in prison that have said, you know, they've already been doing time, and they said, if you know, one of the questions is, if you could do it all over again, would you do the same thing? And you'll get from some, yeah, I'd do it all over again. If I can't have her, no one is. And so for those reasons, I don't recommend, not even, and you and I have had very open discussion around this, any type of putting yourself in physical harm. There's effective ways to respond in reducing the risk, and that's what we want to provide, that type of education.
Right. You know, and while you're talking, my mind is just like rambling. And, you know, I listen to, I'm a good listener. I know I'm a talker, but I'm a good listener. And I listen to people when they, you know, tell me about different stories that has happened to them or situations when they were younger. And I've never been through a, for his family or father, my grandmother raised me in a, you know, a nice, decent home. And, you know, and, but I know friends that, that, you know, when I'm thinking back when I was younger, like, wow, what was really going on in that household? And then now as being a pastor is like, you know, never thought when I was 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 15 years old, I was going to be a pastor. But, you know, I'm just, you know, falling back on conversations. Even today, I listen to people talk and it's like, wow. And it's like, is the question, is it that people just want to vent, or is it they're telling you to, they're thinking that you may have the answer, or is it, you know, like, what is it, you know? And so I think for me, I just listen, you know, and if it's, you know, because I'm a mandated reporter too. I'm a school bus driver and all that, so foster care parents, so I'm a mandated reporter. But I think there's some situations right now that people have been through when they were children, even with their own parents, verbal abuse, physical abuse, that they have not really, that I could see, went and got some professional help or counseling or whatever, and they just hold on to it. You know, even till today, I know people like that. And I asked myself, well, have you ever went to go talk to a therapist? No, I don't need no therapist. But then you can look at their behavior patterns and how they talk and how they, you know, how short they are, or you may say something or that triggers something when they, you know, they were younger and they just fly off the handle. And you're like, wow, you know, what's going on here? So, and I think in West Fresno, we don't know what goes on behind each, or just Fresno, period, or just the whole nation. You know, we're not behind the door seeing and looking and what's going on until they come out the door and willing to talk. And so I just really strongly feel that that was the reason I reached out to you, because I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to say. And, you know, and I didn't know, you know, people was warning me, you know, like Aileen, who, you know, she kept saying, you know, Rev, don't get too involved with that. Don't, you know, be careful, you know, because it'll come bite you in the behind. And even though I'm trying to help, it, you know, it could, you know, bounce back on me. It's like, you know, mind your own business type conversation, you know. And all I'm doing is like trying to care for, you know, the children and the situation. So do you call the police? I mean it's just very confusing for me on how to, I mean, even the situation where, you know, we talked about the young man that killed his sister over here in North Fresno. They alleged that he burned her up, put her in a garbage can and set her on fire. I don't know. But just that whole scenario right there, it's gross, you know? But I'm told that this young man had, you know, I can't diagnose him, but there were some mental issues going on there. Should the family be putting themselves in that position to try to take care of a mental illness person? You know, and we're African-American people. You know, we're so loving. You know, we feel that we can pray. And, you know, I get that a lot. I'm going to pray. But sometimes the situation goes beyond prayer. You know what I mean, Tina? It goes beyond that. And I'm not the one to tell no one, you know, how strong or long to pray. But if someone has a mental illness, yes, praying is good. But they also need some professional help. What are your thoughts about that?
So I'll start by saying that I will not comment on any open case at this specific time, just in case any of my staff has, you know, any of the victims or the survivors right. of any homicide victims. So my comments here forth are in general. In general, what I can say is that the overlap between those with a mental health illness, such as schizophrenia or bipolar personality disorders and PTSD, you know, there's a very significant link between those conditions and violent behavior. So your question leads into, you know, at what point is it time for the family to realize that the issue has gone probably beyond their own scope. I would say that severe mental health conditions, there should always be underneath the care of a doctor. You know, but then we're talking about, like you and I, we serve a large underserved population that doesn't always have access to health care. So now we end up being dependent on, you know, on other resources for that. But hands down, without a doubt, there needs to be that continued care with a medical provider and somebody, you know, managing their consistency with taking medication, because that all impacts behavior.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. It needs some type of, I guess for me, it's like, you know, when do you say I did all I can do? And, you know, I got to get some professional help. Because I think we have to figure out as human beings, where is that line at, you know, and not to put ourselves in harm's way, you know. And I see a lot of that going on in the community. And it's all because of, you know, the family love that person, you know, and they feel that, you know, hey, we can help, you know, we can pray, you know, we can work this thing out. And then something drastic happened and you're like, wow, you know. And then you kind of start having second thoughts. But so we want to thank all those who are on the Facebook Live, all of you who are listening to Tina Rodriguez, Call to Action, Domestic Violence Safety Planning. And we're going to, you know, peel this onion one layer at a time on this Saturday. And I said, there's been a lot of interest, you know, people asking me about it, you know, when is it, you know, what to expect. And I said, well, you're going to have to come to find out what to expect, because I don't even know what to expect. But I do expect to learn something more than what I know now. And maybe, you know, resources, you know. I really want to take a tour of the Margie Mason Center if they still do that, because, you know, as I told my parishioners that, you know, we have to be a ministry that believes in servitude and also believe in resources. Word I'm looking for is to refer people to, you know, different organizations that, you know, do this heavy lifting like you do. So we have a caller online, 3205. Welcome to Dr. Harris, Black Lives Matter Show. We're talking about the Call to Action, Domestic Violence Safety Planning with Tina Rodriguez. Welcome to the show.
Yeah, Dr. Harris. I think the show that you're doing tonight is a show that is definitely very much needed. You know, in our community, we are taught growing up that what happens in the home stays in the home. You don't talk about it outside of the home. And as people get older, and I guess when some of these things occur, instead of seeking help, they are, you know, silent as the grave, because they've been taught, you know, whatever it is, you have to deal with it. And if you out there telling somebody about your business, you're just causing more problems in your household.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You bring up a very great point.
Yes, go ahead, Tina.
So that is something that is, I appreciate that comment because that is accurate. That's one of the things that we are trying to manage with cultural accountability and the messages that we're taught within the home, of which is oftentimes, you know, whatever goes on inside, you don't say nothing. You keep it to ourselves. Don't, you know, depending what culture you're from, sharing certain information can be, you know, can cause actually in some, there can be an added layer of threat and where it'll be shared like, oh, you know, this is going to cause shame to the family name, or you're going to be embarrassing us. And so there's that discouragement. What I can do is share as much information as I can to give inside view as to what it's like to have to pace manage kids that have had to make funeral arrangements, pick out a headstone for their mother, legal battles between existing family members over who's going to keep them, whether or not they'll be separated or taken away. We're at a time in a position now where we have to overcome some of the messages that we have been taught, and those that still feel like we need to manage some of these things within the home. One of the things we're doing is saying that, you know, one of the things that comes up often is that we'll get calls from even individuals that are looking at lifelong incarceration because of domestic violence, homicide. The family members will call, and they'll say, you know, well, I need some kind of help. I'm not well, or I'm dealing with a lot right now, and I want to go to court, but I don't want to go to court. I'm afraid. And they're grieving too. They're grieving many things. You know, the idea that had they just did something sooner. Some of them have shared with me very openly, you know, I regret many things, and there's nothing that could be done now. Nothing. It's, you know, too late now. Now two people are, an entire family is now looking at lifelong grief and has been completely fractured. And so one of the things we do is we talk about that. We talk about, you know, the upbringing. I myself come from a family that's very similar in that talking about these subjects is very sensitive. It can also be intimidating, but it without a doubt is in every family and every generation. And it's time that we start normalizing that and coming up with our role of how we're going to be responsible. And that's one of the things that I really pride myself on doing is that we don't just advocate specifically for one response. We present a series of different ways to respond and to be effective specifically for prevention.
You know, once upon a time, myself and my wife both worked in this field, and she was a licensed clinical social worker both here and in the state of Texas. And one of the things that I can remember is I dealt a lot with children, and with children it's always, yeah, this is going on, but if I tell somebody, then this person's going to be upset, or this section of the family is not going to like me because I told our family business, and now everybody's looking at us different. So, yeah, you're absolutely correct.
So Tina, let me ask you this question here, and I really appreciate you giving us that disclaimer about, you know, going across the line of using people's names and all that, and so we won't do that. But dealing with this, the domestic violence conversation, is there a protocol? And what I mean by protocol is if you know something is going on, or let's say if I know something's going on, and what should I do? Do I don't say nothing? Or is there like 1, 2, 3, 4 steps? Or do I call the police? Or how involved should a person get? I mean, that's where I'm stuck at.
Right. And, you know, and nobody across the entire, you know, nation or even the state of California has an immediate answer, right? Because if that were the issue, I mean, you got to think about it this way. How many officers are, the majority of officers are usually killed when they respond to a domestic violence call. And they've been trained on responding for years. And they still, that's still a very known fact. It, officers are more likely to die when responding to a domestic violence call opposed to any other type of call. So that risk is very elevated. And so when you talk about response and protocol, you specifically are operating out of, out of a church. And so if you're in communication with somebody is at a risk of being followed and stalked, there needs to be a protocol within the church that has specifically how to secure that area, who's going to be responsible, very specific steps to take. And so that's one of the reasons why oftentimes what's interesting is that whether it's domestic violence, gun violence, or, you know, human trafficking, child abuse, whatever, oftentimes the interesting thing is that people usually want to respond by being part of the action, not like how you are, but they actually want to jump into being a service provider. We get that very often. Mm-hmm. I'll get people that have been victims of domestic violence, and they'll pull me aside or approach me and tell me, you know, I want to open a shelter, I want to do this or that. And we'll ask, you know, what type of services have you gone through, or what type of help and intervention did you receive? And so oftentimes, one of the very first things, you know, that comes up is like, well, you know, I didn't go to counseling. Well, did you send your children to grief counseling, or what type of intervention did you receive? No, they didn't do anything. They just want to be, you know, a service provider. And we're going like, those are things that it takes some years to learn and develop. And organizations such as Molly's House is a great one. Torella, she does a great job with the young ladies that are rescued from human trafficking. Took years to get there. It took years to open up that home. It took years to put services in place that honor not just the mental health but the safety part of it. And her and Nicole from the Margin Mason Center, as well as May from Haven Center, all of them are very actively involved and constantly looking at the safety parameters of their locations. That's everything from residential, where they have people in rescue, and then their direct services versus administrative services. And so many of them have multiple sites set up that way. And there's everything from, you know, very high-level surveillance and, you know, systems put in place, staff that's very well trained and versed, that can meet that 24-hour demand and the services that are required. And so it takes a whole lot. It takes a whole lot to be able to implement that. And there are organizations that just run, for example, like counseling services, and they are concerned as well that, you know, there may be incidences where somebody's coming to them for help. So to answer your question, it depends on the severity, the level of risk. If the person is already incarcerated, there's a different response there. If they're being stalked and followed, you can believe that there needs to be a high-level, high-safety response in place immediately. I go back to the comment that was shared with me, with somebody sitting in a prison, point-blank with a camera rolling. If I can't have her, no one would. I'd do it all over again. So that's what I tell people when they talk about how do I respond, is there's a difference in levels depending on the level of risk that you're being presented with.
Wow, that's deep. That's deep.
I think what you're doing is a great way to start. I think what you're doing, you know, like plugging in information and resources and education, I think is a great way to start.
Yeah. It's really mind-boggling, and you'll find yourself, if you ever get into a domestic or know someone that's in it, it'll really start traumatizing you, because then you're like wondering, okay, are they okay? I haven't heard from them. You know, you know, you're driving by the house, you know, the car there, you know, and it's just like you wanna help, but you just don't know where to start, you know, and of course you don't want yourself to get hurt, but then you're concerned about that family, and so I think that, you know, our ministry right now, Free AME, is, you know, really trying to be proactive. I know a lot is reactive, but we're trying to be proactive with my leadership team, you know, exposing them to this conference that we're going to be having. And you're right. You know, I think if folks want to get involved in this, you know, I don't know where the trainings are at. I don't know where you get certified from. You know, I don't know. There's classes at City College. I mean, I don't know. Those are things that I'm trying to find out myself. You know, where can I go to be able to learn more about this field? Because in ministry, we're going to deal with it, like it or not. We're going to, that's the part of the process, unfortunately, dealing with families, you know. Could be someone that drinks a lot. Could be someone that's on drugs. Could be someone that's doing PCP. Could be, I mean, molestation. I mean, the list just goes on. And I'm, you know, talking to my people, okay, so if this knocks on our door, boom, there it is. What do we do with it? You know, because we want to be accountable too, right? And we want to help. We want to assist. But where do we go get those resources from, and how do we get trained? How do we understand what we're looking at? You know, are we walking into something? I mean, because I don't know the difference between someone who's schizophrenic or just having a bad day. And, you know, I mean, I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but maybe there are some videos or YouTube things that, you know, we can look at and kind of get a different perspective from, you know, different levels. I don't know. I see people walking by, you know, my ministry at Free AME. They're talking to themselves. You know, people walk in on Sunday morning, you know, talking to themselves. I mean, you don't know if they have a gun. I mean, you just don't know, you know. And so we're just trying to create a space for this domestic violence safety plan on us, we, community, empowering ourselves. Brother Tony, you mentioned that you're, I don't know if you said you or your ex-wife was a social worker. Now, I don't know what year that was, but do you see things getting better, or do you see things getting worser, or is things the same? Or what is your perspective on this domestic violence?
Well, I can tell you honestly, my wife and I, when we started, it was the early 80s. And from the early 80s till the mid 200s, things actually did improve. And it depends on where you were. You know, you've heard me make that joke about the state of Texas. I always call it the land before time, because when we were in Texas, a lot of times, what we had been doing here in California, they were year and a half, 2 years behind us. Things that they were just beginning to talk about, we had already dealt with and faced out here in the West. But you have to remember, when you start coming to places like California, Denver, Arizona, Washington, Oregon, we're more progressive than the states towards Texas, Louisiana, Mississippi, and we're a little more open about those kind of things. Texas is another state where what happens in this house stays in these walls, and you don't talk about it outside. So now, yes, things have gotten better. There's actually as much funding that gets cut. There's a little more help out there now than it has been in the past, I do believe. And a lot more places are more willing to be open to help, whereas before you had specific places. I heard the Marjorie Mason place mentioned here tonight, and for a long time, that was almost all we had here. So, yeah, there's a little more help out there. And Tina, I think what you're doing is a godsend, because it really takes strong people to do this. And again, it's a godsend, because a lot of it is missing, especially working with all communities.
I appreciate that, brother. Thank you. And you're absolutely right. California leads the nation when it comes to dealing with controversial, sensitive matters. And obviously domestic violence is at the forefront of that. And so that is a very accurate, and that the resources and the rights and the information and the services available, they continue to grow and expand. And I know that our local provider, the Marjorie Mason Center, is expanding as well. And so looking forward to being able to, you know, to being able to say that, you know, we have more services and more resources available in our community. I know that Torella is also expanding Molly's House as well. So knowing that our providers on the ground are expanding their residential services is helpful to know. But at the same time, I want to elevate this. Some are going to make it there. Some will make it to the gravesite, and some will stay trapped in that home, and it'll bleed through ongoing generations. So
yeah.
I want to make sure that's the reason why I say we target everybody, not just one or the other.
You know, Tina, I have a question for you. My wife, may she rest in peace, and I loved her to death. But one of the things that she had a problem with, and we used to talk about this often, was sometimes working with a certain core of women, and I was like, she said, it's frustrating that you try to put your all into helping them, and in the dead of night, they make that phone call, or they creep out, and they go back to that very abusive person. She's saying, for the life of me, I couldn't figure out what kind of hold that person had on them. Do you find yourself having to deal with that sometimes?
Brother, I got people that will come to me in tears, screaming, that will be at their wit ends, saying, I'm not going to do it no more. Next time, I'm not going to help. I'm not going to help move. I'm not going to go pick up nobody. Don't call me ever again. They scream because... Yes, we see that, and that's the reason why, you know, we want to make sure that we start adopting different messages within the home. You know, I had for a long time worked with different service providers that would tell me, you know, we have mothers and fathers that both tell their daughters, you know, you just don't divorce. You do not divorce no matter what. And then this generation, through prevention, we try to shift that language and say that I'd rather have you home divorced than to have to make funeral arrangements for you. So
right.
It's understanding the severity there, right, and shifting that narrative, because there are some cultures where divorce is just – it's something you just don't even bring up. And so you know, that's part of the reason why, you know, that question used to get a lot of backlash, you know, why did she go back, or why didn't she leave? Because the messages are very, you know, you should work it out. You shouldn't leave. Being a single parent has its own type of stigma that comes with it. And then you got the person, I'll never do it again. I promise I'm going to change. I mean it this time. So you got those ongoing messages just fueling over and over again, and that's the reason why we get stuck in these cycles back and forth.
Wow.
Yeah.
This is a real heavy conversation. So Tina, one of the things, not putting you on the spot, and if it's something you can't answer, I understand. You know, I'm again a civil rights leader and deal with policies and police brutality and, you know, pretty much everything. But one thing I noticed about Fresno County is that one time I remember that there were budget cuts in Fresno County Board of Supervisors. And, you know, law enforcement always get the cream of the crop. You know, they're not going to cut law enforcement for no reason, right? But this year, they had to do some real cuts. And do you know the department that they cut was mental health? I couldn't understand that. I said, how can you cut mental health when, to me, that needs to be funded more? But they cut mental health and they hired more police officers. I mean, is that the trend today? Because I'm looking at that as like job security. I mean, how are we going to help people in the community, you know, with mental illnesses if we're going to cut that department, right? But yet fund the jail, build more rooms, hire more police. Where's the balance in that? Or should we not even rely on the government funding? I mean, I don't know. I'm just all confused about all that right now.
So what I will say to that is that, Pastor, it depends, too, on what type of intervention one is seeking to provide, right? Because there's, for example, I recently, these last couple of years, like the last 2 to 3 years, I would say, I've met a lot of people that have actually turned down government funding. And I mean, they put it in writing, like, no, I'm not interested. Thank you, but I'm not interested. And so when I started hearing about that, I was curious and wanted to know, you know, usually people, you have the opposite. People will cutthroat and they'll fight for government funding. So, or for any grant funds or public funds. So I was curious to know what was that about. And I've had people share with me, I don't want to do what's already being done. I want to do something different. And so to do that something different, I have to find my own way to fund it. And I've seen it. I've seen it happen. And so, when we look at ways to provide intervention and ways to treat our families, and you specifically mentioned mental health, which I would say that is a huge, priority. It needs to be everybody's priority because, you know, we talk about this man in you mentioned, one specific case, but there's been several, right, that individuals that are struggling right now, and we don't know. We've not had our hands around this pandemic and COVID's aftermath long enough to say whether or not symptoms associated with long-term or short-term magnify any type of mental health condition. We don't know that yet. So for those reasons, there needs to be even more support around mental health. But depending on which organization it is and how they're administering their services will be a mixed response because there are some that want to do their own thing and they're going to fund it entirely differently.
Wow. Okay. Thank you for that answer. Well, we're about at our hour, and can you tell us the time? I gave the location, but the times of the two different sessions you're going to have.
Yes. So we will be out there this Saturday, and we'll be in there at 8 a.m. We plan to stay for the entire time, and our English, our morning session is from, I believe, 9 to noon, and our Spanish session is from 9 to noon. Our noon session to 3 is the English, and so with me will be Tamara Knox. I'm very excited about that. Those of you that, anybody that's had a chance to hear her story, she's a black woman that survived by first the grace of God, and then somebody heard her crying for help inside. And law enforcement came, and they could hear her. She couldn't walk, but they could hear somebody inside. So the plan was for her not to be alive, but she had a different purpose in this world. And so not only did she come back to be a professional. She came back as a survivor to share her story and to also be able to train other individuals and share a message of what's helped her cope. She's also an expert in the field that provides a lot of information to other professionals that provide the service as well. She'll be live with us, as well as Millie Renteria and Faso Novello, both very well-versed in providing mental health services, as well as safety planning and intervention to domestic violence victims and those that have had to get services due to the loss of a domestic violence family member.
Well, there you have it, y'all. There you have it. I'm putting my number on the screen here, so in case if anyone have any questions, it will be at 806 Collins, Fresno, California, 93706, right on the Golden West Side. And this, to me, you know, Tina and Brother Tony, this is the first month of 2023. And I don't think there's a better way to start out the year with a conference like this coming this Saturday. It really sets the tone. And maybe I'm speaking for myself, but it really sets the tone for what some of the things that we're getting ready to deal with. And, you know, again, we're bringing, you know, professionals, information to the community. Take advantage of it. I mean, we can go to football games. We can go to Fresno State football game. We can go to basketball game. We can go to high school football games and, you know, all that. We can go to the fair. What about coming to something that can really help you as an individual, help your family, help your community? This is going to be a life-changing workshop conference here that we're having this Saturday. Don't take this lightly. You just don't get Tina Rodriguez just out of a cereal box or something. Tina Rodriguez is a professional woman who is on her grind every day, trying to save lives, trying to educate, trying to motivate, trying to, you know, change the narrative. And she loved people. You know, it's one thing I can say about her. She loves people. I mean, she has come to my ministry. She brought backpacks to my ministry. She gave backpacks out to the children. She spoke to the children. She encouraged the children for school. She encouraged the adults that were there. So you're dealing with a quality person here, woman here. And I'm just honored to really have her come to our location out of all the places in Fresno, big mega, you know, churches up north. She's coming to little bitty West Fresno, Golden West Side, to bring her expertise and her team to come. And I'm expecting for the community to show up, because too many times we whine, I didn't know this, nobody told me. Well, we're bringing it to you now. So get on your Facebook, get on your Instagram, you know, call, do whatever you got to do. Stand on the corner with a bullhorn, whatever you got to do. Get the community out to 806 Collins this Saturday. This is the first year, 2023, and we're starting a new year out on a good foot with empowerment, with education, empowerment and education. And this is not going to be the last. This is not going to be the last time we do this. Any last words that you have for us, Tina Rodriguez, before we get ready to close up?
I look forward. I want to thank you one more time for inviting me out. And I look forward to being there and sharing the information. Being in community does something for my own spirit. And West Fresno is near and dear to my heart. So when you invited me out, I snuck that Spanish presentation in. I know you originally invited me in for the English one, but my family's, we're generations of out there in West Fresno. So from my in-laws to my own family. And so I had to do it in both languages and have the utmost respect that you did not say, what are you doing? Because I snuck that in there. But appreciate you and look forward to seeing you all on Saturday.
All right. Brother Tony, are you still there with us?
Yes, I am. And again, this is a blessing. And I'm hoping that the conference is very well. And community, please turn out, because we do not get these things often on the West Side. And when you get them, you need to get the information and go for it. Because like Tina says, this is helping a family, not just an individual, but it helps the family. And whether some of you realize it or not, when it comes to mental health, it's very important. And we must address what goes on. And maybe we can cut off some of this domestic violence before it gets too deep.
All right. Well, tell us about your holler, Brother Tony.
Say again?
Tell us how you end the show with your holler.
Well, this is how I end. This is how I end all the time. Each one, reach one, teach one. Those of you who are proficient with your weapons, take your folks to the range, get them trained, train them up, get them licensed, start a neighborhood watch, start a cop watch, watch the people who are watching us. Take care of your people, stay safe. I'll holler.
All right, we thank you all.
Together and feel all right. Give thanks and praise.